Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Spokespeople Podcast. I am your host, Dave, with our co-host.
Also Dave.
There you have it. Two Daves, no waiting.
Two Daves.
Happy as all get up to do another show with Dave in here. We kind of enjoy having when Dave doesn't have brown bottle flu.
What, was there other people in here when I wasn't here?
Well, yeah, we usually don't talk to you about that.
I'm going to have separation issues now or something.
Well, that would be one of the things on your list. Yeah. So anyway, we've had kind of an interesting process of shows that we've been going over, a plethora of topics.
Many topics.
And we're still going to be kind of coming back and following up on the Tour de France.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's progressing. Not today. No. We want to see how it progresses a little bit more.
I mean, it's ending in 3 days, so we got time.
Right. Yeah. So we'll get all the good stuff, and then we'll come back and we'll evaluate everything.
Spoiler alert, I know who's going to win.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Were you right in your original prediction?
Oh, I was a Vingegaard guy, but, you know.
Were you correct in your original prediction?
Probably not. You know, I really thought Vingegaard was going to come around.
Okay.
He did not. Apparently, if you pierce your lungs, it's really not good for what the kids call the ventilations. So
yeah, that could hinder a little bit of performance.
Breathing is not good with broken ribs.
No. And we'll bring Troy back into it.
Troy was a cool guy.
Yeah. The guy's an encyclopedia.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one a lot. And we've done other things, too. We've done NICA. We've done the NAS. Looking to get the gentleman from Thor on here soon to talk about some of the trail designs.
That'd be cool.
That'd be a good one there, too.
Yes.
Looking to get a cool one from a guy out up in the Pacific Northwest. We'll talk more about that if that happens.
All right, cool.
But today, we are blessed and excited. We've been trying to get this one for a while here, folks. So the enthusiasm is technically overbounding. I kind of had to drop the volume to calm down on this one. She is a busy person. I want to introduce endurance athlete Teresa Bender. How are you, Teresa?
I am great. Thank you for asking. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Really do. You have just a long list of performance races and endurance type rides that are, in my mind, incredibly demanding.
What the French call incroyable.
Incroyable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
that's probably
my not my husband true. Would probably term them as expensive and time consuming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but you know, you got to do what you do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's obviously a reason why you chose this style.
Yeah, I think I like the gut of the long haul.
Okay.
Mhm. Cuz so much can happen and so many variables are there that it's kind of like a fun game and puzzle. I don't know, like you have to think about more than just fitness and fuel for a couple of hours.
Right.
So.
Well, I mean, everybody has a little bit of a different flair to, you know, some people like Dave. I know Dave loves crit. I know he loves gravel.
Yeah, honestly, I don't love gravel so much anymore. I do it begrudgingly because it's just, I don't know. I'm morphing into what I would call the opposite of Teresa.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet, baby. That's where I'm at. You know.
You mean couch potato?
No. I like honestly. I'm more into the shorter stuff. I've done all the gravel things, and they're fun, but they're not really fun. I gotta stop lying. It's torture out there.
Well, I mean, you have people who are geared like Usain Bolt. He's a sprinter, and then you have people who are geared for long marathons. You know, people get their groove. They find their thing that their niche that they like, and they really like it. But you know. I have to say that the longer races, those gut wrenching ones that you do, they're definitely more time consuming, taxing on the body, the mind, the training time, the commitment you have to put into it. But first and foremost, what actually got you here? What's your story?
So I enjoyed like track and cross country in high school. I kind of found it towards my junior and senior year. So I enjoyed the physical fitness part of it.
A Cardinal.
Yes, at Duchenne.
You went to Duchenne?
I did.
Oh, we just rode by there the other day.
Beautiful area, beautiful school.
Oh, yeah, it's really nice. I dated a girl from Duchenne.
I'm really sorry for her.
No, she was very nice.
Has she sought help? Has she received that?
Oh my God, we're talking in the 80s, man. Come on.
Oh yeah, no one did therapy back then.
No one did therapy.
Okay,
way before my time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But anyway, I had a girlfriend at Duchenne whose family did Bran. Dr. Robert Muehlman was her dad, or is her dad, and then him and his family did Bran, and the thought of riding my bike all week just sounded really fascinating to me. I didn't even have a bike when I was like, yeah, I want to go with you and your family. So I bought my boyfriend at the time's mom's bike, which is just this big old clunky hybrid. And my mom came along and drove with us. She was kind of like our SAG for the week.
She literally followed you in the car the whole way?
Pretty much.
Oh, my God.
Because she was scared to death because I was like 17 years old.
Oh, my God.
And I was with her, you know, my friend's family. But, yeah, that first day was wild because it was hot. It was windy. It was when we did, I don't know, some longer days on Bran.
What town did it start in?
I don't even remember. I'd have to whip
the map out. Was it out in the sand hills or anything?
Yeah, it was a 500-mile Bran. So it was a long Bran.
Yeah, those are the longer ones.
Yeah, but, you know, out of that first day of like 600 and some riders, I think only like 100 and some finished. Just because, you know, the weather was hot and windy.
Brutal.
And yeah, it was brutal.
And you finished.
And we finished. My friend,
mom's hand.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my girlfriend and I, we probably rode like 8 miles an hour the entire time. We got off our bikes constantly. We ran around in sprinklers or whatever we could find. My mom was always close by. And that was like, it was really hard. I was totally trashed afterwards, but I was like, that was so fun. And then just the thought of it too, like, I have to do that 6 more days in a row, you know? But they weren't all that hard. But yeah, I always say Bran was really the introduction for me getting into or enjoying long distance riding because you were out in the middle of nowhere. The scenery was beautiful.
It is nice out there.
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, so high school is kind of where it happened. I didn't do a ton in my 20s, just with college and career, none of the endurance or longer stuff. I did do some brands here and there. I kept running, ended up sustaining a stress fracture in my foot in my late 20s that I had a couple surgeries on, had Braxton. And then it was actually after all of that in my 30s where I really started looking more at the longer distance stuff.
I think that's when it hits people though.
Now, Braxton is your son?
My 8-year-old son.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Because I know that you're a nurse practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
And when you said Braxton, I jumped right into Braxton Hicks.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, okay. So, all right. So, what time frame was this?
Was
early 2000s?
For Bran?
Yeah.
2022 was my first Bran. And I believe I've done 9 or 10. I'd have to add
2022.
Up. Or sorry, 2002.
2002.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm really old. Yeah. 2002.
Right, so you were in high school in 2002. Mm-hmm.
How many brands have you done?
I think like 9 or 10.
Oh man, that's a lot of brands.
It's a lot of brands.
Yeah,
you should go and race it next year.
You should
come with us.
So fun.
You could totally.
You should come with us.
Every year, I'm like, oh, I really want to do brand.
We'll put you up in the beast.
There you go.
No, don't. You don't want to. It's.
We'll put Dave in a tent where he belongs.
True.
A small little chicken wire fence around it.
Chicken wire fence.
The last brand that I did was in 2019, and that was before my first Silver State, and that was great training for it.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, so that kind of got you to where you are now, but pre-show, we sat and talked for a little bit about some of the things that you've done, some of the races you've done, and I was flabbergasted, to say the least. I think that's a good word, because I was stunned.
You know, I've done some of these things, and
yeah, no one cares, Dave.
Don't want to do them anymore.
Yeah, no.
They're very hard.
I think I'm at a point in my life where, you know what, I will be more than happy to stand by the side and hand you a bottle of water. You go.
Those people
by.
Are very important.
You know,
and I've been on both sides of it, and it's almost just it can be just as hard to be a support person.
it is, yeah.
Especially if you're supporting me.
And how does your husband do that a lot for you?
After every big race, he's like, I'll never do that again.
And yet he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the way men are. We just kind of complain, but we're going to do it. We know we're going to do it.
We're going to do it.
But I'm trying to evolve into more of a self-sufficient racer too. Like some of the things I'm looking at in the future are more self-supported.
Define.
Like no crew car.
Well, what was that 500 mile thing you did?
I've only done those races crewed with support.
Right. You'd have to, wouldn't you?
Well, IWAR is not supported.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Iowa Wind and Rock.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So is there a benefit to that for you?
Not supported?
Yeah.
It can be cheaper because you're not paying for the infrastructure of a crew.
I mean, logistically, it's got to be easier. You just handle you and your stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a different approach to a race. Some races are only self-supported. So
we'll do the RV. We'll take the Bikeway Beast. We'll take Dave as the mechanic. I'll drive and cook. We'll prep the food.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay.
And we'll go do it.
Work. We're just going to.
I'm dead serious.
Sound system, lighting.
I would love to do that.
It'll be
a TV, hook up the satellite. You get air conditioning, relax, full showers and
full showers.
Mechanical shop there, right there.
Yeah, it'll be
great. A big bend, big Bender sign on the back. You know, right?
Yeah.
Seriously, why not? Because you are an ambassador for the Bikeway.
I love wearing your brand, and you guys do a very good job taking care of all my shit that I break all the time. So
we love you when you wear it. So
yeah.
Yeah, but the one that the Iowa Wind and Rock.
Yeah, that's what they used to call Trans Iowa, and I think you go. Isn't it north to south?
How long is that?
Is it north to south?
No, I don't know about Trans Iowa, but Wind and Rock is a loop.
Okay,
that starts and ends in Winterset, and it's about 340 miles, gravel, cute sheet, navigated only, and you'll get the.
Oh, they don't even give you a cue sheets. JPEG file or nothing?
No, you get the cue sheets 20 minutes
still
before the race.
Still to this day, 2024,
mm-hmm.
You're on cue sheets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
So you don't know where you're going.
It's ridiculous.
And you turn the page after 20 turns, and there's your next 20 turns. And then you get to the first checkpoint.
That's old school right there.
And then you get your next set of cue cards.
Yeah.
So.
How many people have gone the wrong way in that?
Oh, all the time.
All the time. Mm-hmm.
Back in the day when we did that, like everything, all the gravel stuff was cue sheeted. And if you didn't go off course at least once, you would consider yourself fortunate. I went off course twice in what they now call Unbound, which used to be called Dirty Kanza, with like 20, 25 people. And we went like 5 miles out of the wrong way.
It happens all the time. There was an endurance hike. A friend of mine did it. He was a former military guy. They go out, they wear these rucksacks, and they go out in the middle of the desert.
They missed a
map read. Ooh. And they went in. Fortunately, they got found, but they were out of water, dehydrated, ugly. And it was late July. I'm like, you're out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you did this one back in April of 2023.
Did not finish.
You're talking on
tell us
here
why.
IWAR.
Oh, okay. IWAR.
Yeah. My lights froze in the middle of the night. My battery packs froze. I wasn't prepared for those elements. I'm not saying that I would have finished if that wouldn't have happened, but
yeah, you would. I did not
have the lights to see to get through the night because everything was frozen. And hindsight, I probably should have had better battery packs, and I should have taped hand warmers to them to keep my batteries warm.
Well, I blame Jamie for not outrigging you properly for that.
Well, that's the thing about Iowa Wind and Rock. It's in April, and it's
in
the Midwest.
It could be 90 degrees, too.
Mm-hmm. Half the time it's muddy, and people have to hike a bike for, like, tens of miles.
Mm-hmm.
With a heavy endurance bike that probably, weighs 25, 30 pounds minimum?
I've never ridden a bike that heavy that I did at IWAR.
Yeah,
because I had all my supplies with me.
So if it's not that,
so you completely take everything on your backpacking riding.
Yeah, because you don't even know where you're. And I don't typically sleep for durations like that, but you don't know where you're. You know approximately how many miles for your aid station, but like you don't know what's in between you and
people
the aid
don't really
station.
Sleep for that. They just like go into a quick shop and like sit down for a while, right?
Yeah, if that. Sometimes they just keep riding,
or just
because you really don't have time.
Yeah, because there is a time cutoff. It is time mm-hmm. limit.
Oh, 34 right? hours.
Okay, 34.
So you have 34 hours to complete or you're out.
Yeah.
And how many times have you attempted IWAR?
One.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're and going I back? Told I told Sarah Cooper I'd go back in 2025. So.
Okay, so you're going back next year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I had just gotten the bike before the last attempt. The Scott, you guys had changed over to the single speed with the SRAM, and that was great. like, or not single speed, sorry, but a one by.
Okay.
So I had just gotten the bike completely redone. The bike works flawlessly.
You don't want to, you're going one by on something like that?
With yeah.
All those climbs and everything?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it just simplifies it.
Hey, can we talk training? Like what kind of miles are you doing in the weeks leading up to an event like that?
I think I'm not real traditional just because I'm so limited by time.
Yeah.
And the older I'm getting, I'm kind of realizing that I need to modify things. So mileage isn't, I don't think, as important as what you're doing for intensity.
Okay.
And also practicing during the off hours so that you know how to overnight ride when you're tired and things
like
that.
Okay, so you're doing your training.
I would make, yes, I made sure I did
in
some
the late
really,
evening.
Yeah, I did some overnight rides. I would do early morning rides.
We talking outdoors with these rides?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because you got to train the eyes. You got to get, especially for gravel, you got to get used to riding on gravel in the dark. Yeah.
So you're very going to, you know, I have a little secret that Dave doesn't know, but you had told me about a new job that you're going to be having, and that's going to be causing you to be working some long nights.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very familiar with that role. You're going to love it, by the way.
I'm excited.
You're going to love it. Still to this day, my favorite job of all time. I would go back in a heartbeat
if
my body wasn't just shot in so many places. But it does tax you physically and mentally, which is ideal for what you're doing.
It is, yes. Knowing how to kind of push through some of that fatigue.
And the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I just think it's gearing you up for huge success.
Yeah.
So you can tell Dave if you want to, but you can also not tell Dave.
No,
we don't tell Dave a lot of things.
I'll be working full time in Atlantic, Iowa, in their ER. And I'll be doing 12.
Oh, are you guys moving there?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but they're 12 and 24 hour shifts.
Okay.
So that'll allow me the opportunity to have a lot more days at home also.
Okay.
And some of the excitement around that is obviously having more time at home, more time to hopefully recover and properly train, but also, maybe some good commutes. I have commuted there in the past. I'm helping cover for Ragbri when they're in Atlantic this coming week. So I think I'm working like a 3 a.m. to 11 a.m. shift. And my plan is to commute there and commute back. So
what is that, 75 each way?
It depends on where you start. I mean, from Council Bluffs, it's probably about
there's
a
60,
70
mile ride. There's a ton of
good
gravel out there. It'd be perfect for, you know, if that's
punchy,
what you're going
hard.
To.
Punchy, hard, yeah.
Yeah, and it's all, I mean, steep, rolly hills.
Yeah.
The cool thing is it's more equipped for, like, you know, you ride there, you can throw
I can shower. I can just wear scrubs. Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
Boom, you switch back in, you head home.
Yep.
You know, and if you want to, you've got a locker and you just transport stuff out in and out as you
need
to. Man,
you are crazy.
Can't wait.
You're talking about a 75-mile commute with a smile on your face. That's ridiculous.
Right? But, I mean, I think it goes along the lines of the psychology of what she's doing as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's having done that at a high level.
So
it's,
I've done a couple of long gravel, right? And I don't like them. And I did them for like probably 10 years. You know, I did what used to be called the Royal Almanzo, which was 160. Did gravel rolls like, I don't know, 10 or 12 times. And I did Dirty Kanza twice. And I'd always tell everybody, the first 100 miles is fun. And after that, it is a real job to keep going.
And it's not even like the endurance part of it. It's the toll that terrain takes on your body. Like, my wrist and my hands. I'm like, I'm going to need to see a hand surgeon within the next 5 years and get this carpal tunnel fixed. And so there's all these other things that kind of go on to your body when you're on that type of terrain.
Yeah.
That you don't experience really in road. So.
Right. Now, you know, they've got the different adjustments that you can put on your bars where, you know, you're kind of leaning forward and, you know, are those feasible?
I don't utilize aero bars, especially on gravel, because I feel like the handling, I like my hands more on the hood. But I don't disagree that that's probably something I should maybe utilize
or at least get used to just
for different positions. Especially for pros, just because it's not a safe position to be in.
Did they ban them for Unbound this year? I can't remember.
The pros can't use them.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think the age groupers still can.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, the pros are riding gravel like it's a Peloton. So you probably wouldn't want a bunch of dudes on, you know, aero bars
on without gravel. Their brakes. Yeah.
Right. It's kind of, yeah. So it's definitely a safety issue for them, I think, you know.
Well, I've seen some aero bars that actually have brakes up at the front now, too.
Yeah. I mean, for time trials, you see that, but, you know.
Not worth the hassle to put in or install or.
No, I think for, especially if I were to, you know, ultimately my goal would be to do some type of trans country race, and I would need them for that, just for another position to put my body in.
Right. Is RAM still a thing?
Yeah.
So are you thinking about RAM sometime? Mm-hmm.
I think that's too expensive and too much infrastructure. I would like to do more of a self-supported one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Trans Am's an option that's on road. Still really busy. Bike nonstop is probably the safer way to go. It's gravel and rails the trails, but the roads are a lot safer.
Right.
Oh, I think I heard about that one. What'd you call it? Bike nonstop?
Mm-hmm. It's sisters of Trans Am.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Huh. Continental Divide?
Maybe.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have mountain bike skills for that, do you think?
I'm getting them.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
I mean, there we go. Some of that is pretty rugged.
Yeah.
It's a little bushwhacky.
So the IWR was 325, did you say?
40.
340
I finished
miles?
About, I finished at 200.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the big kahuna that you did was in fall of 23, the Hoodoo, 500 mile.
Yeah, that's, so we go to St. George a lot. And
where is this at?
It was in St. George, Utah.
Oh,
okay. And I had done two other 500 mile distance road races. It was nice because Hoodoo was a different one. I had done Silver State previously twice, and that's in Nevada. Scenery is beautiful in Utah, especially the southern part.
Right.
The challenge with these, I don't know if it's a challenge, but it's kind of like, oh, I'm finished, but there's no other females that finished. So it's kind of like, how would you have done? So two other females started, one of which was Leah Goldstein, who's done RAM and Trans Am, and she wins a lot of this stuff. Her and the first place guy kind of took off like bats out of hell, and I'm like, this race is 500 miles. I'm just going to pace it out and see how it goes.
What kind of pace were they keeping?
They were on time trial bikes. They were probably going like lower 20s for miles per.
I'm so
like,
this is all road, this
yes,
event?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with crew cars. And I'm just like doing what I do normally, you know, I just take it easy conservatively. And then in the middle, not even in the middle of the night, but into the night, we caught Leah, and then I was changing and she got ahead of me again. And then supposedly I shouldn't say the word supposedly, but she, I guess had fallen asleep and crashed her bike into a side rail in the middle
fallen
of the night.
Fallen asleep while riding.
Yes. And so I don't know if a part of that was, she said that she had had a cold prior to going into the race. I don't know if a part of that was just fatigue from that, or if she was really expecting to be able to sleep overnight. And that's why she races so hard to begin with, is because she knows she gets to rest, but she knew she couldn't rest because I was right there. I don't know what the story was. And then the other female who had started, I don't know where she quit, but she was always kind of a ways back. So,
and how did you place?
I was the only female to
finish.
She
was the only female
so
finisher.
She placed it first.
Yeah. That would be the first place.
Yeah.
So
and I don't remember
miles?
Overall if I was second overall or if there was another. I know there was at least one man that finished ahead of me, the overall male.
And this is 500 miles?
Mm-hmm.
And what was your finishing time?
Oh, that was 520 miles. I think 38
Okay.
Hours.
And you rode
hours?
All the way through except for like brakes for changing and whatnot?
Yeah, I was only off my bike for a total of like an hour, according to my Garmin.
For how many hours?
38
No, man.
My crew would just hand me stuff on the side of the road, and I would grab it.
How many bananas is that?
I don't eat bananas.
You don't eat bananas?
If no. I did the math, I would say that you'd have to have at least one banana every 45 minutes if that was your main staple.
Yeah.
I know a lot of cyclists that won't eat bananas anymore.
I think brand ruined bananas for me.
But it can.
It did for me. And just recently I started having bananas again. I actually kind of enjoying them. I didn't then, but I haven't for years.
Speaking of nutrition, what are you doing on the bike?
So
for things like that, I realize I don't like solid food. That just kind of sits in your gut. And
oh, really?
You look like you're pregnant like halfway into these races. So I do a lot of gels, electrolyte mix. I typically use Tailwind, plain water.
I love Tailwind now. Yeah,
and then Tailwind. I really like Nutella, which isn't great when you're totally self-supported, but like my crew would just hand me spoons with Nutella on them.
Oh my God. You have the best pit crew of all time. Yeah, no Nutella kidding. Is like bomb, dude.
It's so dense in calories.
It is. It's dense. It's hazelnut.
Yeah.
It's hazelnut.
So you
and
have
chocolate.
Fat yeah. calories and you have sugar.
Oh, it's a lot. It's all the stuff.
And to be honest with you, fat is a fantastic energy
source. For that longer stuff.
Yep.
I mean, people claim all you need is sugar, but...
That's not true. You're already in a lactic acid cycle, so your body's going to actually burn fat more efficiently than it would with your carbohydrates. So by having an increase in your fat, you're giving yourself a good fuel supply.
It works well for me. Again, it'd be hard during a self-supported race. They need to package Nutella in pouches.
If they had gels of Nutella,
exactly. The feed needs to get on this.
They have packets of Nutella.
I've seen
them.
Bought a bunch of Nutella.
I was in a tournament down in Kansas City. I had a younger group of girls. They were all U8s.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think that we play too many games on a weekend. So I brought these little packets of Nutella because I knew mom and dad's would be going to be taking them to, you know, dad wanted to go see a football game. So they went to the bar and they had junk food. So I brought those
Buffalo
little
Wild
things.
Wings.
Yeah. Things like that. So I brought these little packs for them just to have energy. And I'll tell you what, did it right 30 minutes before we warm up. And then we warmed up. And I swear to God, for 45 minutes, they tore that other team apart. They had more energy. It was like jackrabbits on crack. It was fantastic.
It works well for me. It works well for my stomach.
I got
it's not really heavily processed.
No. Yeah. I got them at a Costco in Kansas City.
Okay.
But I haven't seen them in Omaha.
Okay. Yeah, I have not come across them.
I'll keep an eye on for them.
Mm-hmm. I used to run into this thing like when I was doing Gravel Worlds and other long races like that. About 6 hours in, you just get tired of all the, you know, the Gatorade and the really sweet liquids. And also you feel like, I used to feel like, and the other guys would talk about it, like your gut's really not even...
It doesn't want to work.
No. We used to call it goopy gut.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just crave like an honest to God, like bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich with mayonnaise. You know, like real food. You just wanted, I used to bring boiled eggs with me.
I've heard of people doing that.
And I wouldn't eat the yolk because I think that's kind of hard to digest. But the white part is just, it's pure protein.
Yeah. Everyone's different in terms of what,
I don't know if it worked or not, but it's, I don't know. How do you figure that out?
Yeah. I was going to say, do you
practice?
Really?
Trial and error?
Yeah. Like my first Silver State, I looked like I was 7 months pregnant just because I had all of this undigested food just sitting in my gut.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the worst experience you've had in your food testing process?
Probably. It looked and felt terrible.
Okay.
I was so... And I took in too much sodium, so I was just puffy overall.
Oh, okay.
You know, I read an article recently about taking in all these... the sodium and the electrolytes and stuff. Some of these Tour de France guys... And, you know, they're burning tons of calories and they're skinny. Anyway, they're gaining like 10 pounds.
Yes.
10 pounds during a Tour de France because of all of the extra electrolytes that their body is just hanging on to the fluid.
Right.
But they can't not take the electrolytes because they need them.
I'd rather be heavy than depleted.
Yeah. If you're low on sodium, you're SOL.
But 10 pounds during a Tour de France, like going up these, you know, climbs, that's a deal breaker.
I think more guidance on elite level performances involving things like sodium, potassium.
You know, some people's
potassium
body
at high levels is dangerous and at low levels it's dangerous too, especially for cardiac. So sodium, same thing. But I've seen it numerous times where people are like riding, but they drink in water, and then they're like, man, I feel dizzy. I must be low on blood sugar. And it's like, no, you're not. You're actually low on sodium. And so I mean there's a lot more research that needs to be done on that to make it more efficient. But I'm actually in the process of trying to look some of that stuff up because I find that
I would like to see what my levels look like. Like it would be fun to have like an iStat or something at the finish line of one of these.
You know, they've got
how messed up is my blood?
They've got those little machines where you just do a finger prick and it takes, you know, you take a pipette and you pull it.
Right.
And you can
do you track your blood sugar when you're on these things?
No, I had worn a Dexcom for a bit First of all, I didn't know.
Is that the one that you can go on
continuous
your own?
A friend CTM.
Of mine has one of those, and she
and
was
I know that
me.
They're kind of marketing that to athletes now. I don't know if I would utilize that data enough to guide my fueling.
Well, some events like UCI, you cannot wear that.
Well, and I don't know. Right. And I think recognizing the nutritionist, Nikki Kubiak, said, you know, your first sign is your change in your mood.
Oh man!
You start to get cranky. You eat, and that's kind of what I go off of. Yeah.
See, Dave pulls a Joe Pesci cranky. Every day, yeah. So we don't know if it's food, if it's
I'm talking about when we're racing,
lack of a lot of things.
Oh no, you've seen it. You know,
chemical imbalances. just you know.
Yeah.
The second I'm like, aliens. Why am I so cranky right now? I'm like, oh, I probably need to eat. So.
So let me ask you a question: are you a cramper? Do you cramp up?
No, except for the solstice.
I've never heard you talk about cramping, and most everybody talks about, especially for these longer ones, that's a huge thing.
Yeah, no, solstice was the first time that I had cramps, and they were awful.
Well, it was very hot,
and that
wasn't it?
Yes,
over 100?
It was terrible, but that was my own fault. I did not utilize enough sodium.
You didn't? Okay, no.
That'll do it.
Yeah. I put sodium in my bottles and had plain water in my pack. I carried a little extra sodium, but I just wasn't taking it enough. So, and then once you get to that state, you can't really dig yourself out. So,
no. I'm always curious for myself because I, you know, like these longer ones that I no longer do, I would get crampy at like 10 hours and there's nothing I could do. And I always thought it was blood sugar. You know, but I don't think it's sodium because we're just pounding Gatorades and other
stuff.
No,
and some of it's
time.
Just the muscles and the duration.
Yeah, you just can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're gonna take a quick break for our sponsors and also for anybody out there. If you are interested in having your business sponsored here on the Spokespeople Podcast, please feel free to reach out to us at The Bikeway. We'd love to have a conversation with you about it. We've got a couple in the works coming down in the future that we'll announce. But in the meantime, let's take a break. Then when we come back, we're going to talk about the Solstice, Unbound, the triathlons you've done. We're going to talk about some of those individual races and kind of the how those things turned out and what you might be looking at going forward.
Sounds great.
All right, let's step away for a moment in capitalism. All right, we're going to take a second here to give a shout out to our sponsor, The Bikeway. For a quarter century, The Bikeway has been the premier destination for all things cycling in Omaha and beyond. With a legacy of passion, dedication, and community, discover the latest and greatest from top brands like Giant, Live, Transition, Santa Cruz, Scott, Bianchi, Sunday BMX, and DK. We've got the perfect ride to fuel your adventure. More than just a shop, explore our extensive selection of apparel and accessories. And the Bikeway Certified Service Department has you covered, from basic maintenance to suspension work to custom builds and everything in between. And while you're here, treat yourself to a delicious cup of coffee. As a rider-owned and operated establishment, you can trust that we're dedicated to providing the best possible experience for fellow enthusiasts like you. So join us at the Bikeway, where every ride is an adventure. Here's to 25 years of riding together and many, many more. And we are back. And we want to once again thank the Bikeway for sponsoring us. Once again, we are a podcast about cycling in a bike shop. So that's kind of cool, actually. But here's another thing for all you listeners out there we want you to do for us. If you're enjoying the podcast, and we hope that you are, if you have ideas or suggestions, please send them to info@thebikeway.com. We would love to have some ideas or suggestions about future shows that we could do that would give you some information or assistance in your cycling ventures. But if you go to the podcast and you hit that little follow button actually helps us get out to more people.
Yeah, so, follow us or we're going to come talk to your parents.
Yeah, don't have Dave come talk to your parents, please.
And
for the love of God.
Also, don't talk to me in any way. That's fine.
Yes. But hit that little follow button and share it. You know, tell people. This is a good episode, especially for people who are thinking about the endurance-type races with Teresa Bender, the endurance athlete that she is.
Endurance athlete, Teresa Bender.
Endurance athlete,
she
Teresa
has cards,
Bender.
They say that.
That's what the card says?
I'm going to make them.
Hooked on phonics.
There you go.
So we are discussing different races that she's done. We're going to talk a little bit more because there were a couple out there, and there's some elements that I think are really important that I personally feel are important And Teresa, in our conversation, I think you do too. In all the races, and you've raced against professional racers as well, mm-hmm. you're the only mom.
I don't feel like there are many moms in the longer, higher level races. When I'm looking at the results or just kind of seeing who I'm racing against. And I think that, and it's funny because I've never done this. I didn't really do much of this before I was a mom, but my evenings aren't my evenings. And I wouldn't have it any other way. I love the fact that
you became
my evenings,
a mom, and then you're like, oh, you know what? I have all this extra time. Yeah, you know. Why don't I do some endurance training? That would be super sweet.
But yeah, it's just a different, different balance, and it's a great balance, and I wouldn't want it any other way. But I have to typically get my workouts done in the morning because my evenings are spent with the family, either you know, just spending time with Braxton or taking him somewhere, and we're busy. Like, especially my husband, he's got this. He's very close with his siblings, so there's always tons of family stuff going on, and Braxton doesn't have any siblings, so his cousins are kind of it. So really making sure I balance what I do kind of selfishly to be the best and be present for Braxton, as well as all of my nephews. And then I do have a niece also on my side.
Wait till he starts with the sports. Is he into the sports already?
And Eric's a soccer coach for their recreational team. My job is to get Braxton as confident as we can on the bike. So we're going to work on that. We're working on that. And those are terrorist times. No, I think we'll get there. I took him out yesterday at Walnut Creek.
You guys can do that yourself too. It's fine.
Well, no, but kids listen better to people who aren't their parents.
It's super fun. The kids all have a great time.
There's a lot of truth in that.
But yeah, so getting back to the whole like other moms thing, I was looking at the double at Mid-South, which is where, and that was in March. Mid-South is in Stillwater, Oklahoma, one of the big early season races. Super fun, great atmosphere.
The double is like 300?
No, the double is where we run a 50K on some pretty hilly gravel on Friday, and then we do the 100-mile gravel race the next day.
Yikes.
So for all you people that were born before the Carter administration and the introduction of the metric system, that's 31.7 miles.
31.7 is a lot of miles.
Yeah. Technically 31.69, but I rounded up.
It was a long run.
But you have to still have the foot issue.
Yeah. I have a chronically broken foot. It's never going to get better. I probably shouldn't run, but I still do because I enjoy it relatively. So in years previous, the double, a little bit more at what I would say like recreational athletes or kind of weekend warriors. This was the first year where all three women at the top of that podium for the double, they were all like legit pro cyclists. So, and I don't mind that they don't separate the age groupers out from the pros. I'm fine with that because it kind of just shows us where we all stand. But, you know, I was looking at all of the women who ranked above me for that. And I kind of like looked at their social media and stuff. And I'm pretty sure I was the only mom to have finished at least in the top 10. And I was like, well, that's really, you know, I was proud of that. Like, at the end of the day, you know, it's all about doing it for yourself and doing it for your own, you know, life. And I love that balance.
Well, and I'm going to throw a kudo at FDR here for a second, because in our conversation, a couple episodes, I believe it's episode 7 in the Tour de France, we were talking about Eddie Merckx, and he said, you know, there were pro cyclists back then and they were professional riders, but they didn't train 365. You know, they only trained certain times. But now you have pro athletes that are training, you know, 24/7, 365. But in your scenario, you're competing against some of these professionals. And mm-hmm. on top of that, you're not training 365.
Not at all.
And yet you're still in the hunt.
Yeah. I mean, I do what I can. And it's fun to see how it all plays out and how I compare to those who are allowed or have the privilege to do it more full time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about that?
No. I don't.
She has a real job, dude.
Well, I enjoy my job and I make decent money, You know, and not that it's about money.
It's not bike mechanic money she's making.
True.
But also, I don't know if I would enjoy it if I had to do it for a living.
Yeah,
the pressure of that sounds terrible, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
What kind of training week are you doing? Like, between running and riding, are you still swimming or not?
No, I need to. I always say I need to get back to that because it is a good recovery. I try and lift. I do lift because that's important too. But yeah, I typically try and do between an hour or 2 hours during the weekday. And then, you know, you try and get your longer stuff done in the weekends if possible. I try and only take one day off, but you got to listen to your body too. Like today I didn't want to wake up early, so I didn't wake up early. And then I'm not going to do anything today. So I'll make sure I get a good solid track workout in tomorrow because I'm trying to get the speed built back up for running. And then my plan for Saturday is hopefully a century ride, and then Sunday, hopefully a long run.
So track, are you doing like, what, 100s, 200s, that kind of thing?
400s for now. I need to build myself up to probably doing some longer intervals. But
okay,
again, just trying to find some speed again.
I have a program for you.
Okay.
You know, because I work with elite level soccer players.
Yes.
So repeat sprint performance, which is kind of up your alley for what you're doing. I've got something, and we'll talk about that. It's very interesting. I'm doing it myself, and I figure a 54-year-old fat guy can do it and get in shape.
You're not that fat, Dave.
Just like intervals on the bike, those are super important. So.
Yes.
Right, and you have to do the right ones, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then balance it with recovery or off days.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you're lifting weights, are you doing more of a functional
body weights. Mainly just push-ups and stuff like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I have some small weights that I do at home. Weights. Yeah.
Okay. Do you count the number of calories that you take in
a
day?
Not at all. Mm-mm.
No?
I probably should, but no.
That's a lot of work, man.
I know it is.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I've never been one that does.
But you're wearing two Fit watches.
Yeah.
One on
each
wrist.
She's super fit, man.
These She's watches, super big.
Yeah. They can
well,
only
this,
take so
I'm only
much.
Wearing one watch. A Whoop is not a watch.
Okay. Well, they're two fitness pieces, though.
Yes.
Doesn't the watch collect data?
It does. I was more so curious to see how the data compares.
Oh,
and
okay.
They're pretty similar.
Okay.
Yeah. Garmin's a little bit more generous. The Garmin will make you look more fit than
I just don't know about this Garmin as far as like, I mean, how accurate do you think this heart rate reading is?
I still recommend wearing a strap if you're tracking it during activity.
Right. Well, I do. Mm-hmm. And I find like the strap is usually like 5 to 7 beats higher per 100.
Probably accurate then.
Okay. So this is a little bit slower.
Yeah. I don't think that, sometimes I'll be working my butt off and I'll look down at what, if I'm not wearing heart rate strap and the wrist monitor.
Does it look low to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So it's tracking then.
Yeah.
Yeah, the chest strap monitors.
Right, because it's
are
like accurate. An EKG or whatever you call it.
It's closer to your heart.
It's closer
That's
to
the
your
only
heart.
Thing that it's doing. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is like a sensor, right?
But
like an optical sensor.
Depending on what you're trying to accomplish, like if you're running a mass system, and the mass system is basically, Ken from Kilowatt Coaching, discussed this, where you take 180 minus your age, and then you try to work your heart rate into that so you can get into the lactic acid cycle faster to burn more fat. Data supports it, right? I'm doing it, but if I'm using my wristwatch versus a strap, that 5 to 7 mm-hmm. count
That's
can
a lot.
Actually throw me off.
Oh, absolutely.
And not put me in that cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
So data is important, but do you spend a lot of time crunching numbers and going over data? I mean, is that part of your process?
No. No, but I think just being a healthcare professional, I think I know how to analyze what needs to be analyzed and what I don't need to worry about as much on.
Yeah.
You
can get through the minutiae.
Yeah.
So what do you think is your biggest factor in your training process that maybe is unconventional or maybe is specific to you, or works for you because you've been doing it long enough to know that this is what I'm geared for? Is there any one element that you say, this is how I really have to, these are the things I need to focus on primarily?
I would say early on when I was kind of developing the love of the endurance part of it, it was just early morning outdoor stuff. That was those are probably my favorite moments and my, you know, what I enjoy the most on the bike.
You should join the Army. They do a lot of early morning outdoor stuff.
Those guys
but they're
do
being
more
told
by
to
9
do something.
Than most people do all day.
Yeah, but I think for me, it's having the choice to do it. It's it being my choice. I think
oh man, we're
is
so
motivating.
The opposite.
No, I think nobody likes to be told what to do.
And then the feeling that you get from doing well, whether it's even just a training ride or hitting intervals in a workout on the
right.
trainer
right.
or a race where like you really felt good, you know, that post feeling, nothing can really replicate.
Are you one of these people that like looks at your Strava and like looks at the analysis?
How many
like,
kudos have I got? No.
No, not the kudos. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about like the numbers, you know, like, oh, it just said I did 785 watts for 5 seconds. I'm like, yes, you know.
Sometimes it's a measure of how hard you did and how well you did.
Yes. I mean, it's, you know, it's just, we're kind of metricing all the time
mm-hmm.
yeah.
as, you know, I mean, that's the world we live in now. You know, look at when I started, you did everything by feel and then
Correct.
Like, then there came heart rate monitors, Correct. You know, and they were clunky and junky.
I can't even imagine in high school what track would have been like.
Oh man, if I showed you one of my old heart rate monitors, it looks crazy.
Yeah.
And now we're doing watts and all this other stuff. And then you have, you know, you're tracking, this watch tracks my sleep,
mm-hmm.
you know, and gives me like a VO2 number. And like, mm-hmm. it's crazy. And, you know, we're still the same amateur people, you know.
Yeah.
But now we have like science that's like pretty good, really,
mm-hmm.
you know, to track and to help us like do this kind of training. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's the funny thing is that as I'm putting together some textbooks on coaching and I'm reading some of the data, you know, I'm seeing research out there that's still not in best practices that was published in 2002. So a lot of the research that's out there hasn't even reached the cyclists themselves.
And one thing that I found was hard for me to find myself as even a practitioner was like balancing training with a menstrual cycle. And
which
like, why do I feel so crummy during these times? And why do I feel great other times? And I was just, and I actually talked to my own OB about it. And like, no one could give me any concrete information. And I finally found stuff. And I'm like, this makes sense. This is exactly how I feel.
There's an amazing amount of data out there. There's a Netflix special. And it's on soccer. But they're talking about the Chelsea women. Phenomenal mm-hmm. English premier, you know, Women's Champions League. And they talk about how their physio, their trainers, monitor their sessions during those cycles because they actually have a greater risk of ACL tears during that period and injuries, muscle strains,
mm-hmm.
Pulled muscles. So there's data out there, but it's just not getting out.
It's not.
And that's the thing. So it's along the lines of my oldest daughter being an MD PhD student to help bridge that gap between mm-hmm. research and the bedside
mm-hmm.
in clinic. And we need more of that. And with your background and stuff like that, to be completely honest with you, it should be something that you should write for the female ultra athlete. I mean, you'd kill it.
Yeah. Like it's like that the day of the cycle starting, it's like a completely different person. Like my output's better. I just feel better.
Do you ever gauge races by that calendar?
The recommendation is to try and sign up for races when you're going to be on your period, because that's when you feel your best.
You know, it's interesting because another one of our friends.
I didn't think, first of all, that this would ever come up in this conversation.
I didn't either, but it just kind of went there.
But the science is
interesting.
Cool, man. I mean,
there's a couple
for the female athlete,
things.
It's important, and I'll tell you, they're
well. The interesting thing for me is like how it's changing, because this is not a conversation that we would have had as a adults even at this age. I don't know, maybe even 2 years ago, because I was at a race last 2 weeks ago, and you know, one of the female competitors was talking to me about just kind of out of the blue, like mm-hmm. you know, like talking about I use a cycle tracker,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't know, I think it's great because you know we it shouldn't be like stigmatized to talk about it. It's almost silly that it always was,
and it's just so much like a like. I just see the numbers and I see how much better I feel. And
there
how,
it is.
Yeah.
So for me,
during certain times
for me, my whole concept about evidence-based research for athletic performance, if I can give one of my players a 1-2% advantage due to science, do I use it?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So the more
marginal gains, that's
exactly.
Yeah.
So the more we know,
and everyone's
how does that help us in our training, in our competition?
Yeah. Where do you build that
in
recovery?
Week? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we periodize the whole process so that we're hitting those microcycles, so that we're getting the most out of, especially when you work a full time gig, you're a wife, you're a mother. You've got other responsibilities. Yeah. How do you maximize the limited time you have? Mm-hmm. And, dude, the key is science.
Mm-hmm. Teresa, so are you self-coached?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel as a practitioner that kind of puts you over the top, like as far as
I'm not saying I wouldn't benefit from a coach. I just think that I read my own body well.
And you seem to be a self-motivated person.
Yes, I am self-motivated. I will say in the time where I was training with Brad Hildebrandt, that was probably the most fit that I had ever been.
Oh, I didn't know you worked with Brad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I kind of got into more of this stuff after Braxton was born. Because he was kind of starting up with his coaching thing at the time. And so you're surrounded by all these people and you're like, well, look at what they're doing. I want to do it too. So I will say that there's a huge benefit to coaching, but I think I have to have that right person. Right. It is a lot of money. It's not something that I don't think I could sustain year round. I bounce around a lot. And you got to read your body from day to day. Again, like today, woke up. I mean, I couldn't wake up early to do my workout. I was just kind of tired all day. I'm like, I'm just going to scratch today. And then that way I know I can execute a good track workout tomorrow and then hopefully the rest of my weekend. Right. So
let's talk about a couple of these things. I want to just for our audience out there, this is how impressive endurance athlete Teresa Bender is. I do like that title, Dave.
I think she came up with it. I just, like I said, I said it louder. So
let me just say it to you again. And just see how this sounds. It sounds better this way. Endurance athlete Teresa Bender.
Are you trying to get the smoky voice? Oh, man.
Yeah, see, right?
Oh, I did that. Oh, see.
Way to interrupt. I like
no,
that.
Hey, that's my job.
So, Solstice, 100 miles, you won. Elements sucked. Unbound, 200 miles, third attempt, two finishes, third in the age group. The Double Mid-South, 50K run, 100-mile ride. You ran 31 miles with a broken foot, and you got seventh. The Hoodoo, fall of 23, 520 miles. First in women, and quite, did you look up that?
So there was a voyager, so a self-supported person did win overall. So third overall, first female.
Third overall, mm-hmm. first female. Mm-hmm. And the other two are men.
Mm-hmm. That's how it works, Dave.
But that, thank you. But
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, be careful on that one, Dave.
Look, man, we're not going there.
Dude, don't be so judgy, man.
I'm all judgy.
But there's a ton of men you beat.
Not at Hoodoo. There's just not a ton of people that do that. But
look, man, there were more than three.
Yes, or they DNF'd. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. there were more than three that started. How about that?
Yes.
Okay.
That is a correct statement.
All right, and then Silver State first.
Yeah, that was in 2019 and 2020.
What was that?
300 gravel.
Silver State's the 500 over in Nevada.
Oh, okay. Those were my
first races. Yeah.
Oh, okay. 500 road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whew.
And then, but your first one, or one of the first ones, was the Trialta, which was an Ironman you did.
That was in 2022. Okay. Yep. So that was my first and only Ironman.
Where's that?
That was in St. George also. That one's notorious. I don't want to like say it's the hardest Ironman, but it's ranked pretty high as far as difficulty because of the hills. It's a pretty hilly bike course.
That's at altitude?
No, St. George is not. St. George sits at about 3, and then I think you can we climb higher around it.
Okay, well, 3 is altitude for us.
But that was tricky in that in fall of 2021, I had gotten subacute thyroiditis from just this nasty respiratory virus. And so then my thyroid went. So I had to really dig myself out of a hole to start training again because I had already signed up for that. And that was in May of 2022. So I did have a coach for that, but ironically the coach that I hired, decided he didn't want to coach anymore. So then I got rolled over to one of his partners who I didn't know.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, the swim is the limiting factor as far as why I don't do triathlons routinely, because I'm just not a good swimmer. I've tried for maybe 4 years now to become a swimmer, and I'm just not great at it. But that doesn't mean I can't do it. So I was in the water for pretty much the maximum amount of time for that Ironman. But I got out before the time cut off. And then the rest of the day was just kind of surviving. It was super windy, super hot. Tons of people did not finish. But it was fun. It was wild. I really enjoyed it. You know, I got off that bike and I'm like, how in the hell am I going to run a marathon? But I did it. I just kind of slow paced it the entire time. I never walked, but never ran fast. Just stayed fueled the entire time. So,
And there you have it. Endurance athlete Teresa Bender. Proving that insanity can be both productive and fun, because these races are off the chart nuts. I can't tell you how impressed I am with, first of all, the results. Second of all, the courage to do them. I'm sure as hell not doing it. I'll do some stupid things. You know your limits. I mean, I know my limits. But so you've done these things. You've accomplished some fantastic hurdles. And some great marks. What's next?
So I think that what keeps me going is the diversity. Like, yes, these are all long events, but it's a combination of surfaces and sports, right? Between running and riding. I'm signed up for Steamboat in August.
Ooh. The black course. Mountain bike?
No, that'll be gravel.
Okay.
Yeah. And then
love Steamboat.
Mid-South just announced they're going to do the Mega Mid-South. And it's September 18th, and it'll be a 300-mile self-supported gravel race. So I jumped right on that.
Are you signed up for Gravel Worlds this year?
I am not, because it's the weekend after Steamboat.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and not that it matters, but
well, I mean,
I could sign up for it if I, yeah, we'll see.
It's hard.
Then I'm going to end the year with the Hitchcock 50-mile race, foot race.
That's in Hitchcock, Iowa.
Hitchcock, Iowa. Right, Los Hills.
Hitchcock.
Starts at 9 p.m.
Yeah. That's a big deal. My wife and I hike over there, and we actually accidentally went over there one time when they were doing that. And it's very hilly. I don't know if you've been to Hitchcock Nature Center.
Yeah, I know where it is.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
But, oh, my God. It's all up or all down.
So it's a night run?
Yeah, because there's a 100-mile race, and that starts at 5 in the morning, and then they start the 50-milers at 9 p.m.
Wow. You know, on some of those ridges, I don't know if I'd run at night, because you misstep it. And
I was going to say, and you're tumbling.
Mean, well, you could are. Tumble. Yeah. You could really tumble. I mean, it's not rocky.
Could be ice.
Yeah, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Don't they do that in the winter too?
It's December.
Okay, that's crazy. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's 2024.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what the hell I was going to say. I'm just kind of...
It's gobsmacking, really.
It really is. It's absolutely gobsmacking. I can't tell you how much I find this fascinating.
That's not the word my husband would use for it, but.
Well, I mean,
you
know.
He tolerates it, so.
My wife considers herself a soccer widow, so I get it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what our spouses do. They, you know, we put up with them, they put up with us. It's supposed to be mutual there. What about, I don't know how to ask the question. Have you ever thought about getting into coaching? You know, in time? You
know, I don't know if I'd want
to. What's next eventually? Or are you
I don't know if I'd want to do it to make money, because again, I don't know if I'd want it to take
more along
away.
The lines of mentorship.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Especially, I think at this point, I want to see what Braxton kind of gets into.
Sure.
And I think it would be more geared towards stuff that he does.
Okay.
But yeah, I love going out with friends, or like when I led those women's rides, kind of introducing women to gravel and showing them how to use their bikes and teaching them routes or teaching them how to handle.
You would be so great at Devo, especially, you know, with some of these, and it's a lot of young girls that do it.
Yes. Yeah. I love
I mean, it's probably 80-20.
Well,
I don't know.
Not like
70,
that, but
30.
You know, they also have Ironhawk has a swim, bike, run program for young girls.
Yep.
And they do that over at CSM.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one, too. A lot of underserved
kids. Yeah. And Brad Hildebrandt started that when he was here.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of different things out there, but I mean, do you see that kind of as a role going into an event at some point?
Yeah. You know, I'd always dreamed about being a track coach, like when my kids were, competing, but yeah, we'll see. You know, I don't think I'd want to again, do anything, on the adult to charge for money side of it, but
you want to find young Teresa Bender,
and really just funnel her, and
it's like, hey,
yeah,
you could be pro kid. It
but somebody. Yeah, sharing the sharing your knowledge is all about what it's what it's really worth, and sharing your love for it.
Well, listen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on today and coming out to the show and studio and recording this with us. There's a lot of stuff to unpack here.
Yeah, man.
I'm just still kind of mesmerized by the accomplishments. I totally look forward to more.
I'm mesmerized and I'm dead every time serious. She passes me in a bike race, which is a lot.
So. I'm dead serious when I say that.
Just give me 20 or 30 miles and I'll catch. Oh my God.
I was telling, so what's her face? Jesse was like, yes. He's like, where do you think Teresa is? I'm like, man, she's like 10 minutes behind us. Like 5 minutes later, here comes Teresa. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, it just takes me a while to get warmed up.
Like, I thought you were done and dusted. Nope. This girl does not quit.
Well, and that's the thing. So if there is an opportunity and you need support, let us know. Because I think we could probably gather up a crew, run the beast out, and have a blast.
I mean, there's all sorts of ideas going on in this head.
You'll be working your tail off. We'll be having a good time, but we'll get the job done.
Yeah,
we'll get it done.
We'll get it done.
It's. I enjoy crewing. I've done it for people just because I know I utilize it. So I always like to offer that kind of as a give back.
As long as it's not during cyclocross season, I'll do it.
Right. Yeah. Dave has his limitations.
Yeah.
So in so many ways, but I want to once again I want to thank you very much for coming on here. Once again, anybody out there, this is episode 11. Please hit the follow button and follow us. Go back and listen to some of the other episodes if you had an opportunity. This is our episode with Teresa Bender, our favorite endurance athlete, Teresa Bender. Yep. But until next time, everybody, stay tuned. We got more things coming up in the next episodes and casts. I am your host, Dave, with your co-host.
Also Dave.
And until next time, everybody, stay safe and keep riding.